Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments Podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Matt Hoffman, an editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, I sat down with Dr. Paul Fisher and Dr. Gerald Grant, both of the Brain and Behavior Center at Stanford Children's Health. The pair discussed how their team at the center is bolstering multidisciplinary care and harnessing advances in science to improve the care of children with neurologic disease and more.
Professor of Neurology and Chief of Child Neurology at Stanford.
Jerry Grant, Professor of Neurosurgery and Chief of Pediatric Neurosurgery at Stanford.
I think, you know, there are a lot of centers that bring pediatric excellence or pediatric specialty, but I think what we've tried to do is take advantage of the opportunities that the Children's Hospital, situated on a campus next to a big adult hospital, offers. And so I think while a lot of people want to say things are cross and interdisciplinary, I think we do a lot more than talk the talk and walk the walk. We live it every day, whether it's clinical care or research. And I do think in many instances, it elevates the clinical care for patients above a lot of other centers. There are a lot of great centers, there's no doubt, but I think it allows us some really special things, and I know we'll come to some of those.
Yeah, so the center is quite comprehensive, you know, so it's not a neurology center, it's really a neuroscience center, and that incorporates, you know, neurology, neurosurgery, and we have key partners that are also affiliated, say in psychiatry and developmental behavior and pediatrics. So there's so much in the brain that we need to think about, you know, for the developing brain in a child. And all of that comes through, and as Dr. Fisher said, every day in terms of what we do, if we, say, operate on a patient and we're always thinking about the development up to that point and where we came from and where we're going, you know, with that child. And it's always about, you know, offering something that can give him the best, him or her, the best quality of life, you know, going forward, and the best possible development for the future. And our interventions have become earlier and earlier because we recognize the importance of that development piece. We want to leverage the university, you know, it's the hospital, but Stanford University offers such wealth of experience and many different niches of experts that we tap into routinely. So that makes it a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, I can give an example for someone who's never been here. You know, these are all within walking distance of each other. So one of our faculty who's just starting out, Fiona Baumer, who's in epilepsy, Fiona is working with someone in developmental pediatrics who specializes in language and linguistics. She's working with Bill Newsom, who's the head of the Neuroscience Center. And then she's working with Tony Norcia over the Department of Psychology over in the School of Humanities and Sciences. And those are all within, you know, hundreds of feet of each other. And to be able to pull that together, you know, that's what's really unique. Very few people have all those things at their fingertips.
Yeah, that kind of lends, you know, obviously this goal is sort of across the board in medicine to sort of improve the use of multidisciplinary teams and that sort of cohesive working together from all angles. I'm curious, you know, I would imagine that would be one way, but how do you guys think that this center stands out? I know, Dr. Fisher, you alluded to it earlier, how it stands out from other centers that are somewhat similar in the U.S. And then just from a day-to-day perspective, obviously, I would imagine that being able to walk 100 feet away and see someone else in another building, what sort of day-to-day advantages does it offer the clinicians who are working at the center?
I think the biggest advantage on a day-to-day is people are all, the stakeholders are at the table. And if they're not at the table, you say, how can you get them at the table? Even if it's a psychologist or an educator or someone who's a PhD that's not, doesn't set foot in the hospital very often, it's very easy to say, well, gee, who around here does this? Who's most expert? Gosh, and it allows this really incredible visioning to say, if you were sort of thinking as expansively as possible, what expertise would you like to draw on? I think the uniqueness, Stanford does have that breadth to it. That's what's, I think, really incredible. But even in other things that, you know, Jerry's in a world-class neurosurgery department, there's also instances, too, where there may be something that's very rare or unusual, and you need to pull someone off the adult neurosurgery bench because you don't have someone who does it 100% of the time at Stanford. There's all sorts of opportunities of, I guess maybe the way to say it in a sports analogy is the bench is almost limitless.
Yeah, I think when you think about this kind of center, there's a lot of mutual respect we have for each other. You know, in the center, we recognize each other's strengths and what they bring to the table. And that's super important because it really becomes this teamwork, you know, team care, team science, and it's all one. You know, and it becomes very innovative. It's very translational to improve the care for the future and also for the present, you know, these kids that we're managing day to day. So that synergy is just, you know, it's very exciting to work in that kind of that, you know, culture. And that doesn't come easy. And it's not true everywhere, I think, that you can't force that kind of culture. It has to be very natural, I think, between a team that really feels, you know, they can work together well and really have the same interests at heart.
I would imagine the patients sort of reap the benefits of that collaboration. You know what I mean? Knowing that, you know, if a patient comes in to see one doctor and then is headed off to another part of the center to see another, knowing that those doctors have easy communication between one another, I would imagine is only beneficial to these patients.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think we're very exemplary, whether it's a child with spina bifida, a brain tumor, a neuromuscular disorder, spasticity. We basically always have people's epilepsy. We always have them together at a table planning. And then it's very common that kids are all seen in the same day. There are instances, too, where myself, Jerry, others say, well, let's go see this family together in person. Sure, there are things you can leverage because of technology and Zoom, but still, there's still nothing better post-pandemic of going and, you know, having everyone there to really work with the family. I think it's really, it's very productive from the provider end, but I think really helpful on the patient and family end.
Yeah. I mean, it even goes beyond our expertise, right? For example, on all these epilepsy weekly multidisciplinary conferences we have, we may talk about two or three kids for that hour, and everyone's very engaged and looking at all the data to come up with a team plan of what we think is best for that child. So the family's getting, you know, an opinion of, you know, those 25 people. And we, you know, we sift that into some, you know, final plan that is makes the most sense. But even radiology plays a big role, right? They're on all these calls too, and they're interpreting some of the imaging and also innovating, you know, in a way of, okay, hey, we can look at that better this way. And that provides just so much back and forth that makes it really, I think, fun to have these team meetings. And we have many of them like that.
I think the people are all into, Jerry, they're focused. I mean, it's not, they're not looking at other notes. They're not distracted. They're not playing on their cell phones. You know, what impresses me, whether it's tumor board or an epilepsy conference, or you've got everyone all in. And I think it's because one of their dedication, but two, because there's such energy and excitement.
And now, obviously, I know, you know, Dr. Grant, you mentioned how a lot of that collaboration, it has to be, you know, it's not something you can force on people. It has to sort of organically grow. But I'm curious, are there any plans or how do you two feel that the center and just the university and the health system as a whole sort of fosters and maximizes that collaboration? Because it does sound like, you know, as organic as it is, that, like you mentioned, Dr. Fisher, that people are buying in. Are there any specific practices you guys have that sort of help foster that team building and that sort of interspecialty collaboration?
There are a couple of things. I mean, behind the scenes, one, on the academic school side, the neurosurgery and neurology share administrative structure. So that keeps us very together to begin with. But then there's a Center for Brain and Behavior, where we also then draw in psychiatry, neurology, and neurosurgery. And there is a structure to that to basically leverage programmatic building and research building. We just talked last week about trying to bring our developmental pediatrics people into that center as well to really make it expansive. So I think that's part of it. And I think the other part is Stanford in and of itself has a very interdisciplinary tradition across the entire university. So I think it becomes an expectation. And so if you pursue it, it seems to come very naturally.
And I think it's special how Paul and I work together, you know, because it kind of sets the tone for the rest of the team as well. You know, they see us as working together on these areas, and, you know, we want to push agendas that, you know, he might feel strongly about something he's eager to push for, like a new faculty recruit or hire, and or vice versa. We're always thinking together, okay, how can we help these, you know, young faculty members and mentor them better and get them to a place that, you know, we bring everyone up together. I think, and that comes from, I think, a leadership, you know, to recognize that this is a center of excellence that we have that encompasses a big team, but you have leaders that really appreciate what everyone brings to the table. I think that's what's really important.
Absolutely. And now you alluded to earlier innovation and how, you know, this incorporation actually of multiple people into the process can actually help sort of build that out. As far as, you know, technologies or tools that are available to you guys, is there anything special or unique about what the center is utilizing? Are you guys, you know, taking that sort of first step with some of these newer technologies that have been rolled out over the last couple of years?
Well, we do. There's many things we do, say, in the operating room. There's many innovations that we were, you know, early adopters, for example, robotics and the incorporation of robotics. And it's not just to be kind of cute, you know, robotics, you know, allow us to be much more precise and efficient and improve safety. And when you can start showing that and really show how we can now in three dimensions target many deep areas of the brain safely to come up with a plan for this child to cure epilepsy. I mean, that's what that innovation just feels like, it's all worth it. Paul can talk about maybe TMS, which is another really cool innovation coming down the pike. And for us, virtual reality, augmented reality, the whole 3D world is now open to our view. And there's no way we could go back to 2D, you know, and it's working together with the neurologists also to say in three dimensions to interpret EEG, for example. That didn't come easy. That had to be thought about and rehearsed and educated together. So you want to talk about TMS, for example, or some of the innovative trials?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, a couple things to say. I mean, I think obviously we're in the heart of Silicon Valley. So there is a very much, you know, Stanford is sort of the initial catalyst of Silicon Valley in terms of technology and science. So there's often a saying, you know, of not fearing failure, trying to roll out new technology. So I think people do push the envelope toward the example of Jerry Ray's in terms of TMS. So right now, you know, we're launching a TMS, transcranial magnetic stimulation program, both for diagnosis and then ultimately for therapeutics and epilepsy. And what's cool is that it's, as I said before, with Dr. Baumer, you've got people from all these different angles that you wouldn't be able to leverage at many other excellent children's hospitals. I think that's incredible. I think the other part in terms of leveraging technology is even the biotechnology. Another example is, you know, we're leading things with something called CAR T cell immunotherapy. So we're now pushing that. It's clinical trials, so we need to preface it that way. But we're able to literally, this is not just someone saying bench to bedside. Everything's been done. The science has been done at Stanford. It's been translated. And we're in the middle of a trial that looks pretty encouraging so far in some refractory brain tumors. So that's just incredible. And honestly, very few places will be able to pull that all off. And, you know, if you measured in feet how far away the folks doing CAR T cell work in the lab are, I don't know, 1,000 feet, 1,500 feet, it's that close.
And now you mentioned sort of the the advantages that this center has and its ability to sort of maybe do some things that other centers might not be able to do. So in that sort of same breath, how replicable do you think this sort of center is? Obviously, you know, I would imagine, you know, we're not going to have something this advanced perhaps in every county of every state, but are there enough sort of larger health systems across the country that a center sort of this nature could eventually be a more widespread occurring institution that, you know, some of these centers on the East and the West Coast and in the Midwest might be able to develop something sort of that mimics these processes that you guys are able to access and the technologies you're able to leverage?
I mean, absolutely. Because I think, Matt, if you can only do it in one place, I mean, it's great that you can push the envelope and do novel new things, but you need to be able to translate them. It's the technology and the translation. And so CAR T cells, an example. So if things go well institutionally, then the plan will be certainly to take that technology, share it, and do a trial nationally with 10 other big centers across the country, because that's how you really get good care out to patients. Not every patient's going to come to Palo Alto. That would be silly. But we want to certainly share and advance children's health, advance children's neuroscience on a regional, national level, not just in our own backyard.
Yeah, and much of this, of course, doesn't happen in a vacuum. I mean, obviously, we have to have a clear vision on what we want and what's important. And the patient is at the heart of all those discussions. And I think if you lose that, you know, you'll lose the flavor for really what's important, you know, in our center. It's about the child that we're trying to treat for whatever disease it might be. We're getting so subspecialized now. But no question, the hospital also has to invest. Right. The hospital has to believe in what we're doing because of our vision and say, yes, this is a worthwhile endeavor and we're going to invest in this. None of this equipment in the OR and all these advances are cheap. You know, they're very expensive, and especially being early adopters. And we have to take risk, you know, and I think it's worth it if it's going to help these patients and really come to fruition of some advance that's innovative that is going to change the standard of care. I think that's what's really exciting about what we're doing. But the hospital is a partner, right? They have to believe in what we're doing.
Yeah, I think one example that just came to mind, Matt, of sharing technology and sharing science. So one of our faculty, Michelle Maje, has done some incredible pioneering work developing basically cell lines in something called DIPG, a very ominous brain tumor. And, you know, families have donated cells from their children who did not survive this horrible cancer. But in a very magnanimous way, Michelle has openly shared these cell lines across the country and across the world, often even to her lab's expense. But she's felt very strongly about allowing other centers to push their science and then try new therapies, be it drugs or other therapies, so that we all succeed together.
It seems to be almost to echo that sentiment of within the center, that sort of brand of teamwork. You know, if you do foster that enough, it does seem that then that is encouraged center to center, university to university, institution to institution. I'm curious, you know, we talked about a couple, you know, sort of chronic conditions, things like epilepsy. And a large conversation that we've been having this year particularly has been about that sort of transition of care for these patients from, you know, the pediatric process into the adult care process. Is there anything at this center that sort of helps ease that? I know that has been particularly in epilepsy, you know, can be a challenge for patients. Is there anything the center is processing to sort of help these patients who we know are going to potentially have care for a really long time that, you know, we may handle them for a decade? But when they hit a certain age, you know, there is a handoff to the adult care.
So we do have. So we have a great neuroscience health center on the adult side. And so over the last decade, we've really established a well-worn path of how kids can or young adults can graduate from epilepsy clinic at the children's hospital to the adjoining or nearby adult clinic. And we do prepare them. That said, as you raised the point, this is a national issue. There's lots of chronic health conditions in childhood. So we do our best, whether it's neuro-oncology, neuromuscular is an example where it's a combined adult and pediatric program. But there are times, too, where admittedly are there some children where they might be 25 or 28 and they're still being followed at our hospital because it's so rare we don't have a corollary person? And I think we do that. We don't, you know, we try not to do that all the time, but we do it because we never want someone to feel their child or their young adult is out in the cold. We're not going to say, gee, you're 23 and, you know, gee, I wish I could find something for you. And so we're really, and it's funny because families are actually often comforted to say, well, you'll still like, yeah, well, you know, we'll figure out when you hit, I don't know, 28, 30, 32, we'll figure out what to do. But I think we try to aim toward transition, but if it's not there, we also don't want to leave them out in the cold.
Yeah, I mean, what we love about what we do is this continuity of care. You know, we get very attached to these families. We may have been involved, you know, even in the fetal area where we're counseling the mom or before delivery, and then here we are and getting their, you know, admission to college. And, you know, so that's why we do what we do. We just love following these kids. But there's the separation anxiety is huge. You know, these kids are nervous, you know, to go to the adult world because it is a little bit harder to have these kind of teamwork, team clinics. They're so much more common on the pediatric side. It is a little harder. It's a little bit more once off, but there are great, great teams up there as well on the adult side. So I think we have the best of both worlds here because just like some of the adult partners may come to the children's hospital to help out with some expertise that I don't do every day or my partners, I go to the adult side and do congenital conditions that they need help with, that, you know, congenital problems that they don't handle every day that I love going, you know, it's not far. We're attached, you know, even though we're separate hospitals, were really integrated. I think that makes that partnership really special here.
I think even as a very concrete example, obviously we've got a major university with college students and graduate students, and there are instances where we will simply ask the student, what do you prefer? You want to be with, what's a better situation for you, the children's hospital or the adult hospital? And they do. They have very strong feelings about which one they'd like to be at.
Is there anything that the two of you think that the clinical community particularly should be aware of about what the center is doing or should be looking out for as sort of time progresses and the center sort of continues to do the work that it is, you know, expecting to do and these goals that you guys are attempting to reach?
I think the one thing I can say is, I've been here now a while, but I grew up on the East Coast like Dr. Grant. And until you've actually been at Stanford, you can hear about it, but sometimes hard to envision. And I think to really impress, I mean, everyone who ever visits here, whether it's a guest speaker, whether it's a family, whether it's a faculty member you're interviewing for a position, I think they're always bowled over by everything being here. It's like a buffet of interdisciplinary opportunity. And it's, you know, I've been in other wonderful places, visited many other wonderful places. I've yet to see anything quite like it.
Yeah, I do agree. It's a rare opportunity here. Also geographic, right? Because as you said, we work very closely with our, say, School of Engineering, you know, and the bioengineering integration is huge here. And I have these engineers in my operating room. I have the students thinking about what is difficult for us in the OR? What do we need? And there's nothing better than having them in our OR and seeing the reality of how difficult some of these areas are and how they can help us. And it's that kind of synergy of I can be over there in their shop, you know, doing some of this concussion work, say I'm doing, and they can be in my OR seamlessly. And I think that kind of culture is wonderful anywhere that can adopt that same idea of how to integrate, you know, these partners and, you know, around the campus and also collaborating in other institutions, which we can't do it alone. We love interacting with our colleagues around the country.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.